Thus I lay 6 weeks in the struggle of youth and constitution against the friendly efforts of death. Time, however, that great comforter in ordinary, began to assuage the violence of my sufferings and to numb my feeling of them. My health returned to me, though I still retained an air of grief and dejection, which, taking off the ruddiness of my country complexion, rendered it rather more delicate and affecting. The landlady had all this while officiously provided and taken care that I wanted for nothing, and as soon as she saw me retrieved into a condition of answering her purpose, one day, after we had dined together, she congratulated me on my recovery, the merit of which she took entirely to herself, and all this by way of introduction to a most terrible epilogue. "You are now," says she, "Miss Fanny, tolerably well, and you are welcome to stay in lodgings as long as you please. You see, I have asked you for nothing this long time, but truly, I have a call to make up a sum of money which must be answered." And with that, presents me with a bill of arrears for rent, diet, apothecary's charges, nurse, sum total £23.17, towards discharging of which I had not in the world more than 7 guineas. At the same time, she desired me to tell her what course I would take for payment. I burst out into a flood of tears and told her my condition, adding that I would sell what few clothes I had, and that for the rest I would pay her as soon as possible. But my distress, being favourable to her views, only stiffened her the more. She told me, very coolly, that she was indeed sorry for my misfortunes, but that she must do herself justice, though it would go to the very heart of her to send such a tender young creature to prison. At the word prison, every drop of my blood chilled, and my fright acted so strongly upon me that, turning as pale as a criminal at the first sight of his place of execution, I was on the point of swooning. My landlady, who wanted only to terrify me to a certain point, and not to throw me into a state of body inconsistent with her designs upon it, began to soothe me again, and told me, in a tone composed to more pity and gentleness, that it would be my own fault if she was forced to proceed to such extremities. But she believed there was a friend to be found in the world who would make up matters to both our satisfactions, and that she would bring him to drink tea with us that very afternoon. To all this, not a word of answer. I sat mute, confounded, terrified. Mrs. Jones, however, judging rightly that it was time to strike while the impressions were so strong upon me, left me to myself and to all the terrors of an imagination wounded to death by the idea of going to a prison, and, from a principle of self-preservation, snatching at every glimpse of redemption from it. In this situation I sat near half an hour, swallowed up in grief and despair, when my landlady came in, and observing a death-like dejection in my countenance, and still in pursuance of her plan, put on a false pity, and bidding me be of a good heart. Things, she said, would not be so bad as I imagined if I would be but my own friend, and closed with telling me she had brought a very honourable gentleman to drink tea with me, who would give me the best advice how to get rid of all my troubles. Upon which, without waiting for a reply, she goes out and returns with this very honourable gentleman, whose very honourable procuress she had been, on this, as well as other occasions. The gentleman, on his entering the room, made me a very civil bow, which I had scarce strength or presence of mind enough to return a curtsy to. When the landlady, taking upon her to do all the honours of the first interview, for I had never, that I remembered, seen the gentleman before, set a chair for him, and another for herself. All this while, not a word on either side. A stupid stare was all the face I could put on this strange visit. The tea was made, and the landlady, unwilling, I suppose, to lose any time, observing my silence and shyness before this entire stranger, "Come, Miss Fanny," says she, in a coarse, familiar style and tone of authority, "hold up your head, child, and do not let sorrow spoil that pretty face of yours. Here is a worthy gentleman, who has heard of your misfortunes and is willing to serve you. You must be better acquainted with him. Do not you now stand upon your punctilios and this and that, but make your market while you may. At this so delicate and eloquent harangue, the gentleman, who saw I look frighted and amazed, and indeed incapable of answering, took her up for breaking things in so abrupt a manner, and then, addressing himself to me, told me he was perfectly acquainted with my whole story and every circumstance of my distress, that he had long taken a liking to my person, for which he appealed to Mrs. Jones, there present, but finding me so absolutely engaged to another, he had lost all hopes of succeeding, till he had heard the sudden reverse of fortune that had happened to me, on which he had given particular orders to my landlady to see that I should want for nothing, that he had desired my landlady's good offices to introduce him to me, and was as angry at the manner in which she conducted herself towards obtaining him that happiness, but to show me how far he was from taking any ungenerous advantage of my situation, he would, before my face, that instant, discharge my debt entirely to my landlady, after which I should be at liberty either to reject or grant his suit. To all his speeches, however, I answered only in tears that flowed plentifully to my relief, and choking up my voice, excused me from speaking, very luckily, for I should not have known what to say. The gentleman, however, drew near me, and, under the pretence of comforting me, first with his handkerchief dried my tears as they ran down my cheeks. Presently he ventured to kiss me. I sat stock still, and now looking on myself as bought by the payment that had been transacted before me, I did not care what became of my wretched body, and, wanting life, spirits, or courage to oppose the least struggle, even that of the modesty of my sex, I suffered tamely whatever the gentleman pleased, who, proceeding insensibly from freedom to freedom, insinuated his hand between my handkerchief and bosom, which he handled at discretion. Finding thus no repulse, and that everything favoured beyond expectation the completion of his desires, he took me in his arms and bore me without life or motion to the bed, on which, laying me gently down, and having me at what advantage he pleased, I did not so much as know what he was about, till recovering from a trance of lifeless insensibility, I found him buried in me, whilst I lay passive and innocent of the least sensation of pleasure. A death-cold corpse could scarce have less life or sense in it. As soon as he had thus pacified a passion which had too little respected the condition I was in, he got off, and after recomposing the disorder of my clothes, employed himself with the utmost tenderness to calm the transports of remorse and madness at myself with which I was seized.